CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to a fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, Matt Campbell, owner of
Battleshopper.com.
So before we kind of start talking about today's show, because today is a bit of a weird one, and the post-show, and if you're watching live, you're going to want to stick around for the post-show for sure, because Robert's going to learn a game.
You already know the game, you just don't know it yet.
Right. How does it feel to actually have finished this up? Because this has been a project that you've been working on for, like, as long as you've lived in Austin.
No, actually not.
It's probably, really? Okay.
Well, kind of, like, it evolved. So, effectively, what happened, the way this kind of worked out was, for the longest time I played, and I guess I still kind of do, I have all my cards, I just haven't actually played it in months.
You're now, what's funny is, and we'll talk about what the heck we're talking about in a second, what I love is that you're now, you're less, like, you're not the player anymore, you're the guy behind the counter now.
Oh, well, we'll get to that in a second as well. With Magic, yes. With Hex, the guy behind the counter plays to promote the fact that he's behind the counter.
Right, but that's the thing, is that that's what always the... If you've ever been to, like, a comic book store, like, or, like, a gaming store, typically they'll give a demo, but...
I stream on Twitch to promote my store.
Interesting. Okay. Well, you know, let's
for the longest time,
yeah,
I played a game called Magic: The Gathering, a card tradable card game. Tradable card game. TCG.
Correct.
We'll get into the differences between a TCG and a CCG in a moment. And it is, of course, a paper card game.
Right.
And effectively, Magic has gotten to a point where it is a point of popularity that the buying and trading of these cards is, I would go so far as to say, literally $1 billion a year industry.
Yeah, it's celebrating its...
Oh, it's 20 was like when I 20 the 20th anniversary was like when I got started, like,
yeah,
3 or 4 years ago.
Because the thing is, like, Magic...
I think
I've known of his existence since I was in the fourth grade, and that was back when it was fourth edition.
Right. And so
I always remember Brian always told me the story how he sold a Black Lotus.
Yep.
Which is the greatest
thing. Remind me to
point out
something in the post show.
Sure.
There's another friend we have that might be into that good luck, good fortune.
Interesting.
And I just don't want to out him on stream.
No,
I don't know if he, because A, we don't know if he has it yet. B, we'll see. It's become such a big industry, and
yes,
the price, and it's so expensive to continue to play that there is a sub game of trying to find the best deals and trying to, like, play the market and all this other stuff.
Well, because when Magic came out, like, that's when the TCG and the CCG scene exploded.
Well, no, I'm talking about today.
Yeah, oh yeah,
like,
today
I don't care about your silly 1994 shenanigans.
But even then, that because of that market, you know,
the market back then didn't exist because the internet didn't exist. The market that back in the day, Magic was designed, in fact, and Richard Garfield has gone on record as saying the idea of it was,
right,
I will have a card that you have literally never did not know existed.
Right. When the game was designed, you're absolutely right. It wasn't designed in the way that it is today.
Right.
You know, it wasn't until things like Scry came out and magazines and all this,
right,
kind of
and
bullshit.
And even more so in the internet.
Right.
Now we have Star City Games, Channel Fireball,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. Okay.
So, these days, you have such a... there's such a market that there is a sub game of trying to get the deck that you want to play for a price that you can actually afford.
Right, because you know, if you're pro, it's and any of these.
No,
games.
If you're pro,
yeah, and this is on any of these kind of card.
Yeah,
games,
if you're pro, you typically have enough friends that someone has the cards that you, or someone just has the deck, or you have a sponsor.
Any
just
cards
hand
you,
you the
any
deck.
Any game that you can trade in, whether because you can't trade in fucking Hearthstone,
and that okay, and so. Eternal, which is a game that is being developed by a large number of Magic pros, actually, are on the development team. And I believe it is... Is that the... I think it might be the Elder Scrolls one. If not, it's something entirely different.
I can't remember which one. Yeah, there's an Elder Scrolls one. I can't remember which one it is.
There's Eternal. Right. There's the Hearthstone. These are what are called collectible card games.
Right.
The biggest differentiator between a collectible card game and a trading card game is that T. That T is very important. Trading. Yeah. So in Hearthstone, I buy a pack. I open the pack. I get a super rare card. I say rare, not valuable, because... The only way to turn that card into another card is to grind it down into dust. And I have to do that with a bunch of other cards, and then I make another card.
Right.
With Magic, I have a card. I say, hey, this is a super valuable card. Hey, you have a card I want. I don't want this card. Here, you give me that.
Right, exactly. We make a trade.
Or you sell it.
You know, the market has set a value to it, and it becomes...
And we haven't even gotten to that yet. Right. So the subgame, though, of Magic Finance... I enjoy just as much as playing the game, if not maybe even a little more.
The idea of how...
Of buying, selling, maximizing value.
How effective can I, you know, either A, how cheaply can I make this deck and still be effective, or more so how much money I can make by flipping this card?
Sure.
Or both?
Both. Yeah, both.
Okay.
And for the most part... I'm just like twisting.
I just don't want to break. That's all.
And for the most part, I was. I mean, I still think I'm kind of bad at it. There's a difference between trying to flip. Flipping a collection is a lot easier than speculating on what card will become valuable.
Yeah,
flipping collections is really simple because you have a $6,000 collection, and you want to get rid of it now. And I come to you and I say, okay. I'm not paying you $6,000 for that. I might pay you $3,500 for it.
And I'll take it because I want to get rid of the cards.
Right. And then I take the time and I part it out and I sell it and I might make $5,500, $6,500 or something like that.
Right, because I just want to offload it because my girlfriend's screaming at me like, why the fuck do you keep these cards you don't play with anymore? Or my parents are screaming at me.
Exactly.
Or me, it's just like, I'm trying to get rid of shit in general.
Sure. You're moving, you're downsizing. Well, why the hell do I have all this stuff?
Right. I still ask myself that with the cards but in the back of my closet.
Because we've looked through them and you don't have much.
Oh, no. You haven't seen the giant box yet.
Oh, fair.
I've never taken that out yet. Like,
so
the commons on the
And so there was a gentleman by the name of Jeff Hoagland who was a professional Magic player.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess he kind of still is, but he doesn't really play. Magic's in a weird state right now, and it's not very fun at the moment. The Modern and Standard are actually very not fun right now.
Okay.
He turned me onto this game called Hex. Hex Shards of Fate.
Right.
Is a game that... is very similar to Magic the Gathering, so much so that at one point Wizards of the Coast sued them.
Right.
Settled out of court, everything's great. So, the thing that fascinated me even more is parts of the settlement caused Hex Entertainment to become more creative with how they built their game.
Yeah. Because, you know, few people know this about Magic, but it's the one of the few patented games. Or what? Not one of the few patented
games. No, okay, so we could do an episode.
Right. But the point being...
On the lawsuit.
But the point being that...
That's the thing, though. You can't patent... Like, they don't have a patent. If they had a patent, they would have sued over the patent. The lawsuit was all about like trade dress and stuff of that nature.
Okay,
and it was something that
interesting.
And it was something that they probably could have dragged out and they might have even lost, but it was a, I'm a Hasbro subsidiary, one of the largest toy manufacturers on the world.
We have infinite, we have infinite funds.
And so they were like, okay, we'll settle.
No, that's fair. But I think like the thing is that, okay, it was trade dress. That's interesting then. Oh, wow. Okay. So it was literally just the fact that they had,
if you're curious, I got a good article specifically about that.
Well, cause I know about the patent for the longest time. I don't know if it's still valid or not. It might have expired for all I know.
So I got into this game,
right,
because it was interesting.
Right.
Then I discovered that Hex Entertainment releases all the datas. So it has an in-game auction house.
Right.
And every day they release every transaction that occurred in that auction house for the last 24 hours. And so I was like, oh, I can take this data and I can play with it.
Right.
And I can play this market.
It's like a stock market at that point.
Better. It is a stock market that I have 100% knowledge of.
Right. Exactly.
It's stock market. There's no one entity that knows 100% of the trades at what price those were traded at.
And
even if they did have that data, the stock market as a whole is so large that compiling and making any use of that amount of data is pointless.
Well, there are, I'll put it this way, there are broker houses that,
sure, they get close enough,
right, but the point being is that this is what I'm saying is that, like, if you follow the Hex market, or you can follow the Hex market like one would follow the New York Stock Exchange, in the idea that you could, let's say you have this card A, right? And card A went for $5 at one point.
Right.
And then next trade went for like $5.50, $5.60, whatever. Like, I'm not saying that it's going to necessarily,
right,
give, it's not, this is me trying to explain to the audience who doesn't know card games well, sort of explaining what, well, how important is, you know, the idea that
you're actually, my code is, actually, I'm not going to say any of that.
Well, I'm saying the idea of,
yeah, you can kind of map trends.
Right, exactly.
And so I was going to make a little toy that effectively showed me the trends. And then I ended up having some conversations with some of the bigger players in Hex. And I realized that there was a real market. Because we said earlier that Magic the Gathering is a $1 billion-a-year industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that there are literally thousands and thousands of people, entities, whether it's an individual selling on something,
I would
like
say
TCG,
almost like the entire, like, either CCG or TCG market, whether it be digital or otherwise, is like a massive market, you know, more than $1 billion at that point.
Well, no, I'm saying just Magic.
Right, okay.
So like it, whether it's Star City Games, which is like the largest Magic store,
right,
down to your next door neighbor who sells on TCG Player, which is an open, yeah, marketplace that anyone can buy or sell on. There's hundreds of thousands worldwide, people buying and selling and trying to make their living off of this card game. There was one company that was doing that for Hex. And so I was like, oh, well, and I got some insight into how much they may be making. And I was like, oh, well, if this information is right, then they're making...
I can take a little bit of that pie.
Yeah, if that's their entire pie and we split that pie in half, that's, I'm really gonna be happy with half of that pie.
Right.
Not even half that pie, a third of that pie. That did make me real happy.
Right.
And so that's what we did. Or that's what I did. I took my little toy and kinda rejiggered it and added some stuff and went out and
made a storefront.
Bought a storefront.
Right. Well, hooked it up to a storefront.
Right. Hooked it up to a storefront, and now I have a storefront, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback, and it's doing pretty well.
So here's a question I'll ask. I mean, obviously you mentioned that you stream to promote, and that's fine.
Right.
That seems like an interesting way of doing so, and everything else. I guess here's the question I'll ask. Even though it sounds like it hasn't really affected you because you did it in Magic all the time, but how does it feel to, like, do you feel you view the game differently now?
Oh. Well, yeah, because,
like, I guess I'll tell you this, like let's assume, like, I assume you, much like in any other game, you can buy packs of cards.
Right.
Do you still buy packs of cards, or do you do you just slowly deal in individuals now?
That's an interesting question, because yes, I deal in packs of cards, and I'm going to be dealing, the next set comes out hopefully this or next month.
Okay.
And that's, I'm going to be dealing in a lot, or hopefully I'm going to be dealing in a lot of those.
Yeah, because you have to have, inventory of stuff.
I have to get, that is the only way to get the new cards is to buy packs.
Right, exactly.
And so the goal is going to be pre-sell. So, like, as they're being spoiled, be like, oh, yeah, we'll sell that for $3. And so the idea is someone says, I want this card for my deck the first day it comes out. So I will buy it from you rather than having to go and try and open. It might take me 30 packs to get one of this copies of this card.
You try to build a specific
yeah.
Specific build a deck.
And so we're the one that says, okay, you buy from us and we'll buy all the packs and we'll just keep the leftovers, and that's our new inventory.
Right.
And so I'm going to be buying a lot of packs then. To get started, we did go out and buy mainly collections.
Okay.
Maybe bought 200 packs total.
Interesting. Do you view, because I guess the thing, the question goes, and this is why I ask it, is, you know, because if I'm like, whenever I've never got into a lot of the trading side, or never really gotten to the, you know, buying individual cards. I think the only time I've ever bought a full, like, individual cards was when I was trying to make a full set of Unhinged. Because it's one of my all-time favorite joke sets of Magic.
Well, I mean, it is
one of the two, you know. Like, I was about to say
it's one of the two.
Right.
So.
I haven't made it Unglued yet, but I've wanted to make Unglued desperately. Because I love the gags. I love
sure.
the humor of things.
It's great.
It's part of, you know, it's built into me, and Mark Rosewater, you know, being one of the head guys there makes me happy still.
Have you ever heard him talk for more than 3 minutes?
Yes, he does. He does have a very, very sing-songy voice. I'm not going to lie.
I would love to have a conversation with
him. I would too.
But, he has a very, I'll just say, interesting voice.
Yeah. No, I would love, like, I have so many questions of just on Roseanne alone to ask him. Just Roseanne alone, that writing style, that writing team. Like, I would spend an hour with him.
Okay.
But the point being is, when I open a pack, I go, oh, cool, I got this card. Awesome, I pop this open. You know, like, oh, cool, what's that card effect
you
do?
You lose that
right.
so
that's,
quick.
That's what I'm going to ask. Like, do you just lose it? If you're just like, junk, $3, cool, boom.
Well, okay, so it's Hex is a digital game. It is 100% digital. And so they do have a really cool animation where you open one pack. But that's only if you open one pack. They do have a thing where it's open multiple packs, and so that's what I do, is I just open 10 packs at a time.
And it's just like,
well, and it just,
and you do a quick,
just display,
and you do a quick
scan. I look at the 10 rares, and I'm like, okay, that one's all right.
It's like,
next.
Yeah.
Oh, and I mean, I'll be like, oh, that's the $20 card I needed.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, you could flip anything in the end of it all, and someone's looking for something.
Yeah, and that's actually been one of the things that I've been almost shocked by, was I was expecting to use a really inside Magic baseball game, a Magic ball game, like, terminology. I was expecting the spikes.
Yeah.
And to explain that, there are three kinds of card games that the internal Magic developers used, which was the spikes, the Timmies,
and
the Johnnies.
Okay. And Timmy is power gamer, meaning that
Timmy loves
big things.
Well, okay, so really we can almost these days narrow it down into two categories, which is the Timmy Johnnies and the spikes. As far as I'm concerned, as a buying and a seller, the Timmy Johnnies are casual players. They like their big spells. They like to do big things, and they like to have fun.
Yeah.
The spike cares about winning, cares about efficiency, cares about...
And Johnny was always my favorite one, because, like, the idea of... I could never really perfect it, because I could never figure out how to do it well. But
yeah,
I always,
like,
enjoyed...
As a game designer, you have to worry about all three.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, as a seller, there's only two.
No, for sure.
I've been almost amazed that a large number of the orders that we're getting appear to be more casual cards.
That, I mean, I would imagine so, because I would honestly think of the following. If I were a pro, let's assume that, you know, or a person that I'm assuming there's somewhat of Proskynin and Hex already, or at least there's
And that's one of the really cool
things.
There's
one emerging at least.
They do a free to enter cash 5K. Almost, I think it's every month now.
Yeah,
and here's the really cool thing: is it is capped to 128 players, which is actually really good. And the way you get into it is they have ladders. They have ladders for limited, and they have ladders for constructed.
Yeah.
And if you were top 64 in either the limited or the constructed ladder,
you get
an entry to this free $5,000 cash tournament.
That makes sense. And I imagine like the ladder ones that there are ranked tournaments that are then paid for of some sort, either a draft or seal.
Well, this constructed ladder is 100% free.
Okay.
The limited ladders, limited being a constructed ladder is, if you're unfamiliar with card games as a whole, is I have a
deck. Yeah, this is like card game one. This is like TCG, CCG 101.
Yeah, is I have a deck. In this case, it's 60 cards. I sit down. I play an opponent. Limited is, in this case, a draft, which is I open three packs. I'm oversimplifying it. It's a little more complicated than this. But I open three packs. I make the best 40-card deck I can. And then I go sit down and I play someone. And obviously the reason why you have to enter the draft is because, and the draft is paid is because you have to get the packs, and the drafts also have prizes individually.
Okay. I'm trying to think of how they then do construct it as a paid thing.
It's not paid. It's free.
Right. No, I'm trying. This is basically saying, like, how do they make money? This is now the business side of me asking, how does...
Oh, you have to buy the in-game currency.
Okay.
And the in-game currency buys everything. So the in-game currency can buy your packs. It buys entry to the drafts.
That makes sense. Okay.
And you can go in and they have an in-game auction house where you can buy cards directly.
And they take a bit of
And 5% of every transaction that occurs on the auction house is removed from the thing.
That makes sense. Okay. I understand now. Because I'd imagine again, like just like the game has to look completely different. But when it comes to you're asking the idea of the casual thing, I can assume that when the new set comes out, because it sounds like you got in like mid cycle through a set or something like that, right?
Mid cycle, say like, that sentence again.
Like when you opened,
didn't hear you. What you said?
It's okay. Like when your store opened, you didn't come in at the beginning of a new set.
Correct.
I can imagine that when a new set launches and you're getting inventory for that set, that you're going to start to see maybe more spikes at that point. Because
hopefully.
Well, because I that's the only thing that makes sense is that like at that point, people have figured out their formats, especially when it comes to the new stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I would say I'm probably making more money off of spikes. But I am getting more orders from the Johnnies.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the fact that the spike cards are the cards that are worth more because they're the powerful cards
right.
And they're the efficient cards. So, like, you could go in and buy 30 Johnny cards.
Yep.
And then the guy next after you could go in and buy two spike cards.
Well, because the Johnny has, you know... This is the one thing that always kind of bugged me about the pro scene in Magic, but it makes sense because it's the pro scene in Magic and any of these kind of card games, is that there are only so many decks that are viable in that format. In other words, there are only so many ways that you can make and efficiently, within a certain format, whether it be limited or constructed, and, you know, in the early days, type 2, whatever the hell you're playing, there's only so many ways that you can make a deck that could effectively win X amount of times.
Right, and that's actually one of the things that's going on in Hex right now is there are two dominant decks.
Right.
And everyone is crying that, you know, that they're too dominant.
Right.
And I would argue that that people just aren't exploring because there's so many unexplored decks in Hex.
And this is sort of where this is where the Johnnies come into play. Because if you think about even like in the history of...
Kind of, sort of.
Well, I'll put it this way. In the history of Magic, there was a card called Necropotence. That wasn't... You know, when they made the card, they, you know, they was like, well, you know, it's a joke. You know, who's going to exchange, you know, life for, you know, a resource? You know, why would you do that? You almost risk the game.
The Super, Super League still, a lot of the times, doesn't know what they're doing.
Right. But that became this hit card that is just, like, was insane and became the became that whole entire, you know, pro scene. It almost made the pro scene and it started changing a lot of stuff. So right. I'd imagine Hex is still in its early days where
they're about to release their sixth set.
Right.
They've been around for 2-3 years.
That's still pretty new for that kind of
game. Oh yeah. No, it's still new in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
But like they're not, you know, they're alpha or whatever.
No. But what I'm saying is that when it comes to those sort of things, a lot of times, like I said, in the pro scene, there's only so many things that can work. Where the Johnnies, and the only reason I can see why you sell a lot more cards to them is that they have a mission in mind. They've figured out, they have their project.
There's another thing that Hex does that, to my knowledge, I don't even know if Hearthstone does this, is they have a rather large and, from what I've seen, very interesting and complex player versus environment mode.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, like, there's a lot of these guys, they're like, and it's great for the Johnny. It's great.
Yeah. Well, because that sounds interesting to me. And the idea that you could make this deck where it's like, okay, this works in this specific arena or whatever the heck, you know, the environments are.
It's a campaign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it's actually kind of really, and I kind of blew it off at first, and then I'm watching some people, because I watch a lot of Hex streamers now.
Right, because, in the industry.
Yeah, and some of them I'm like, hey, you want an ad deal? I've gotten a couple.
No, of course.
And some of them are getting like further into it. And initially, like a lot of things, it kind of starts slow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm seeing people that are, you know, really far into it. And I'm like, wow, these are cool.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them have been like, yeah, no, I'm trying to build this PvP or this PvE deck. And the community is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many communities that are Cossitic. And yes. a lot of the people that are buying are just like, yeah, man, I like what you're doing. Like, keep it up. And like, they didn't even necessarily need to order from me, but they just wanted to order because they could.
Well, because if the way you pitched it and when you told me, like, because we've been talking about this idea for a long time.
Yeah.
And in that, like, you had told me, hey, I have this idea for this thing. Because you first pitched Hex to me, which after the end of the stream, we'll be playing some Hex Live. And,
yeah.
And you'll see Roberto fumble through a new card game again. Although apparently it should be familiar from what I understand. That's what I've been told. But when you told me about this, like, oh, it sounds cool. And you're like, yeah, but the real reason I'm telling you this is because I have this idea for a storefront. And, you know, launching, I mean, because I can imagine that the idea was the easiest part and the code was the easiest part so far. What's been the hardest part of launching this whole thing beyond just getting it done and stuff like that? I say that like as if that might have been it.
So like there are kind of two things.
This is the question of like what's the challenges of being now a small business owner?
Well, I don't even think like
you are.
Oh no, I definitely am. Like I think some of the biggest things are going to be is like taxes became a lot more complicated now. And I'm just going to have to hire someone for that. So like a lot of the two biggest things,
I'll say when you find your guy, let me know. Cause I may need a guy. I may need a guy next time.
The two biggest things was probably first off, like I had all this code base to do all of this back end stuff. And it worked and it was, to what I could understand, good. There was a long time, a matter of months, where I was just like overwhelmed with the concept of actually doing a front end, and I was trying to go around and see if I could pay someone to do it. And it came down to where I was just like, well, why don't I look at one of these pre-built things? And I looked at Shopify, and I discovered that Shopify is hot garbage.
Shopify is, I wouldn't call it hot garbage. I would say that it's very, 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 it's geared towards selling physical things.
I mean, the one that I'm using is definitely geared towards selling physical things, but I just made it work. And the thing that I discovered with Shopify that annoyed the heck out of me.
I'm curious, actually, now.
Is I realized that no pre-built, pre-packaged thing wanted to do exactly what I needed it to do. And a lot of these places had development things, had front-end things.
Right.
And I went to Shopify, and I was like, okay, I need this, this, and this. And they're like, okay, well, they effectively said, we have this great development thing. Go contact one of our developers. Sent 7-8 emails out. Never heard back from a single one of them.
Interesting. Okay. So,
and then I went around and I looked around. There's the company called, I think, Miva, something like that.
Yeah.
And they were great. They called me, or like, they were very responsive. They're like, yeah, no, give us a moment. We'll get, I explained what I wanted done. And they're like, we'll get you an estimate. And they did, less than 24 hours later.
Oh, there you go.
And that estimate was the custom development that you want will be $15,000. With the possibility of everything setting up would be $35,000 to $50,000 to get your site off the ground. And I was like, that's
out of your price range.
That's, I was like, the custom development, the $12 or the $15,000 is an order of magnitude larger than the entire budget for this thing.
Yeah, I'm that's doing. Fine. That's okay.
And they're like, oh yeah, no, we get it. And so I found one that that I've been pretty happy with.
A little bit more bootstrappy, if you will.
Well, it's they're hosting it, this is developer talkie. At the end of the day, I'm going to have complete source
right,
code.
That's the point. It's a bit more. When I say a bit more bootstrappy, I mean that you're not paying someone to custom make it. You're custom making a lot of it yourself. Not just on the front end. Like the front end's already done.
Right.
But you're hooking into an API and you're coding against it.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, not really. But I will have the ability to do that, which will open up the ability to do a lot of really cool things that I'm looking forward to being able to do.
For sure. It's fascinating to hear you talk about this finally and get it off the ground, because I know that you don't have to talk exact numbers of like how much money you're making, because I don't want to have that revealed in any capacity.
Right.
But it's fascinating to hear you talk about like, yeah, this is happening, this is this, and there's traction.
I will say that within, I think we started on the 14th.
Yeah.
And it is already making enough money to have it be worth continuing to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like, I realized very initially that my expectations were unrealistic, because I thought I was going to be like, 3 months in, hey, I can quit my job now. But no, that's... I figured it would either succeed... It was either an on-off switch. It was either going to never make any money, or I would be making all the money that I would ever want almost instantly. And obviously...
There's a middle ground somewhere.
There's a very large amount of middle ground.
But even the idea that... Like, is it at a point where it's paying what I always consider the make or break thing for a digital product, if possible, if you can get it this way, you've succeeded, in my opinion, is if it can pay for itself, if it can cover the hosting as best it can.
So it's already covering its own hosting.
Okay.
The interesting thing is, and I am not an accountant, so I don't know how all of this math works out. The initial cost of inventory is still something that I need to pay off, and it's nowhere near paying off its own initial inventory investment. But that's also not necessarily, I think, due to accounting whatnots, that would be considered an asset, not a debt.
Yeah. Because this is where the interesting thing comes up, and this is sort of where, if it weren't for things like Bitcoin and Dogecoin and all those other cryptocurrencies, it wouldn't matter. But you have, this digital thing that you're not selling as a good. Like, I mean, you are selling as a good, but that the market has set a value to. You know, like, this card is worth 10 cents. This, these bits are worth 50 cents, whatever the hell.
Sure.
I wouldn't even know where the tax would begin on that.
We're treating it effectively just like, as far as sales tax,
like store inventory.
I don't know the inventory, like my tax implications.
That's fine. Don't worry about
yet,
that.
Yet, because as we previously stated, I need to find a CPA.
Yeah, that's fine.
If you're a CPA within the Austin area, randomly watching this thing, give me a call. Matt@battleshopper.com. That's not a call. That's an email. Whatever.
I know. It's okay. Because I find this, I say I find this fascinating just because
technically I imagine within the terms of service of the game, even though, and I've spoken with Hex Entertainment employees before I went in and spent a large sum of money buying inventory.
Right.
That yes, their terms of service do allow to buy and sell these cards and packs and pretty much anything in the game with the exception of the in-game currency.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, obviously they don't want it to be directly exchangeable,
right,
for real money.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like, the reason I find this fascinating is that you're as close as I've ever gotten to asking the guy behind the counter, how does all this shit work as a business?
I'm finding that out as I go.
But this is why I'm asking these questions, because like what excites me is, one, that A, it's succeeding, which is great. B, it's covering its own expenses. Maybe not the initial stuff yet.
Right.
But it's covering the hosting.
That,
which is,
and I did just buy a pretty expensive laptop to run this thing.
Right. You know, there's all
which
this,
I kind of wanted to do anyways. So
right, and that's okay.
Know,
I mean, again, you haven't quit your day job, so you still have a steady source of income to fall back on, which like any good beginning business person should. To be honest, a lot of streamers do this, a lot of independent guys do this, a lot of podcasters do this, yours truly included. But I always find I've never had the ability to talk to somebody that's, you know, like the Dragon's Lair guys, like the Pat's Game Shop, whatever.
I mean, I'm betting if you ask the Dragon's Lair guys, they might come on.
Because I've always been fascinated, especially when it comes to the card games that I play. Because, you know, us going to grow up as kids, you always see the counter of cards. And you go, who the fuck buys all this stuff? Who has $30 to buy this one card? Who's going to come here and buy this one, you know, Magic the Gathering card or...
Oh, I mean, that one's, you know, pretty simple because, like, maybe not for your average, but, like, I can tell you Star City Games being one of the largest Magic the Gathering stores, if
right.
not the, they
yeah,
claim they're the...
I would say that they are. I would say that...
Like, they'll
I would say
have,
they're one of the hubs of Magic, to the point where not only, A, do people buy cards there, but, B, they have, like, articles there, they have, like...
Oh, they're probably, like, yeah, they're... Yeah.
They're one of the, like they're, it's they're, Watsy and them.
No.
Well, I'd say like as a
well, no. I say no in the fact that WotC actually doesn't put out competitive articles nearly as well as Star City Games
okay.
or as Channel Fireball.
That might have been more okay. I guess on the competitive side, no. I would say like WotC. Like again, for me, I was always the This is tells you where I was more like I always wanted to ask these questions to person, but where I was way more fascinated was how the fuck is this thing made? You know, like I would always
sure.
I always love like Wizard of the Coast for all their development.
I mean,
docs.
I've tried my hand at the idea of game design.
Yeah,
and that's something that I may look at later
on.
No,
but even that being said. I have, you know, I know those places exist and they're there, but it's not like I can ask that, you know, because
I'll tell you this.
Go for it.
I looked into at one point a brick and mortar game store and because I had some friends that we were definitely in it and we got to the point where we were looking at retail locations and I'll tell you how those work.
Yeah.
They work on bare minimum margins and
yeah.
chances of them making it, like you have to be lucky,
right?
And
no,
like
exactly.
know everything that you need to know.
I have known
in order
many,
to not just straight up.
I've known
fail.
Many of friends in Flint who had game stores that just collapsed.
Oh yeah, because like that you can have everything right and then. Just have like ever you can have your location,
yep.
your inventory, all this stuff lined up, and then it turns out you know you might not have a market. It turns out
yep.
that something doesn't work right. It turns out that you know that the location was two blocks too far away from the campus that you wanted to work from,
or more importantly, it could be something as even catastrophic as you know something happens to the retail location as you're there, you know,
sure,
heaven forbid. Whereas you have that, you know, as a digital front, and I imagine even as Star City Games has a digital front, like you don't, like it's sort of like the Amazon thing, is that you, like inventory becomes something, but it becomes meaningless because, you know, you could theoretically have a warehouse of this stuff at the most.
Well, okay, and so that was the other thing.
Right, whereas you don't even have a warehouse, you have this digital account.
I have an account.
Yeah.
That is very well secured.
Right, but the point being is that, like, that's it. You don't have to. You, for example, like we talk about Magic and flipping, you know, card sets and at the beginning of the show, you don't have to keep giant boxes and boxes
and
of
that
inventory.
That was one of the things that, like, we looked at opening and when I said we were looking at one point opening a brick and mortar, like, local game shop. Yeah, that game shop was probably not going to sell online initially because I did not want to have to deal with an inventory and shipping cards. And yep. Once I got to the point where I was able to say, you go do this, I will manage you doing this because I know the market well enough to do so, then yeah, we'll do online sales, but not initially.
Yeah, because that requires, like,
that was one of the things that I was never wanting to. I do not want to have to ship,
because that becomes an entirely thing of, like, well, now you got to learn you become sort of a, how do you ship this? Because the thing is,
no, I know how to. I've done cart shipping. Shipping Magic cards is incredibly simple.
Well, right, but physical fulfillment in as a whole is an annoyance. Not because it's not hard to ship something. You just pack something up and whatever.
A 10-cent increase in stamps,
yes,
can
exactly
affect your bottom line.
Right,
for
exactly.
The year.
This is sort of the idea, is that physical fulfillment is if you ever wonder people why a Kickstarter fails or succeeds or is late, it usually has nothing to do with the project. It has everything to do with physically fulfilling all those t-shirts and stickers that they added to it.
There are
some companies now that are taking those mantles for the bigger ones, like Fangamer. You know, the guys that I literally got some stuff Kickstarted recently from them, from Earthbound, the You're Not Earthbound and the manual and so like that. They're the guys that make, like, a lot of t-shirts I wear,
I wonder if there's an industry in Kickstarter fulfillment management.
There is. That's what things like kickback, like the backer manager things, whatever the hell. Like, anytime, like the kick kit or whatever that's called. I forget they exist, and they handle the physical fulfillment. Like, you ship them the stuff and they handle the physical fulfillment and getting all the surveys and getting all the info and updating,
sure,
and shit like that. Like, there is a side of that now too, but that's because physical fulfillment's hard. It's hard in that you have to be hyper detail oriented and, like, go, I've shipped it. This is what they want, this is what they've had, check, shipped, and confirm that you shipped it, and then you know however you have to track it.
Yeah, and that's one of the funny things, and I actually haven't gone in and looked at it, is so our system is very much the platform that I'm using, and one of the first things that when I do get the full source code that I'm going to change is things like our shipping thing. And because, like, I have a system when in the orders, I mark it as shipped. And I mark it as shipped with the carrier as in-game mail. And right beneath it, it says tracking number. So I'm pretty sure that all of my customers are getting a tracking number with just a blank space, like a label, tracking number, blank space, for
all their
orders. And I'm like,
seems,
so it
seems
is
so bizarre.
Very, yeah, because it is so, the system is not... It actually does have a methodology where, and I might actually have to play with this when I get home because I just had this idea, where it has a thing where you can say it's a download.
Yeah.
And so I guess then it doesn't necessarily
work. Because this is what's
in. But then it would, I got to play with that. That might work.
Because this is where I find this market fascinating in general, much like I found, you know, Magic the Gathering Online fascinating in general when it came to this sort of stuff and all the other ones, is... You are technically shipping a product. Like, you are, yep, like you know, for all intents and purposes, you only have one. You have a limited amount of cards in stock of X type, and once,
correct,
you've sold out of all those cards, you're out of inventory until you've acquired them somehow.
Correct.
And so because of that, you are still physically you're still shipping something, whether it be bits or whatever. It doesn't matter. You're still basically saying, "You player, here's this." And so it's I find it fascinating because you're doing this, you know, you're doing this sort of physical, you know, this, like, it's that weird zone that we were never supposed to get into as you know, in the digital age where there's limitations on things.
Well, no, it's the word you're looking for is scarcity.
That's what it is. Okay. Yeah, because there was
scarcity.
Because the thing is that when you come to, a digital product,
it is an imposed scarcity on an infinitely copyable medium.
Right, and I just find
but that's Hex.
Right,
Hex's,
but that's a card game. That's right. The nature of
Hex's,
these card games.
Hex's battle or Hex's the game plan. Hex's business plan. revolves around the idea of this digital scarcity.
Right. Ash in the chat room says that the server users has an option for digital goods, but this is where a download is here's a link.
Yeah.
Everyone can get that. You know, maybe it might be a unique link to that file, but that file is for example, I sold MP3 online. That file could be infinitely copied a billion times where I don't have I've sold out of 20 MP3s. I'm sorry, but that's how card games are. And that's why I'm not blown away by that, because that makes sense for a card game physical thing. But it's the idea of here is that middle ground, that ground of you don't have to track a shipment, you immediately send a card. It's in the player's hands.
Correct.
Boom, done, shipped.
So easy.
And yet, because of the way the systems have been designed, it's like, here's a shipping number.
Right.
For something that doesn't even matter. It's weird. It's cool. And it's got to be exciting to be in that sort of realm.
Yeah, it's been crazy. It's been fun. I'm really excited for what we have in store. We're doing a lot of really interesting things, even in the next week or so.
I'll be honest, I'm excited for you as a friend. I'm happy that you've gotten this off the ground, because I'm always happy when my friends do something awesome and do something amazing. I'm never like that, oh, I'm jealous. No, I'm happy that it's succeeding, because I'd rather, anytime anyone comes, when you ask me, should I do this? I go, dude, I'm the worst person to ask, 'cause I'm going to tell you, go for it.
Yeah.
I'm never going to tell you no. If it's something you want to do, fuck it. Take the chance, do it.
Sure.
But I'm happy that it's looking promising, and I'm happy that it's making you look at things differently. I think that's what makes me excited, is that now you look at the card game that you used to play as this is inventory. Now I got to buy a box of cards.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's one of the things that's been really funny is there's a big tournament coming up whatever, and it's anyone can enter a tournament or whatever. And I'm streaming the night before because I'm testing out this deck, and I'm like, well, if someone wants to prevent me from playing in the tournament tomorrow, you just buy this deck, because this isn't my deck. This is the store's deck.
I love it. I love the idea of this ain't my stuff. I think that's got to be the turning point now for you. That's the way I'd imagine somebody at a comic book store thinks, is that this is no longer my stuff anymore.
Well, I mean, I still have a personal collection,
right?
And if someone wanted to buy something from my personal collection, I would probably sell it,
right? But the point being is that you now, even though it's the same account.
No.
Okay, it's different accounts.
I do have a separate account.
Well,
which I actually had to get special permission to from, because their terms of service is one account per person, and I was like, well, can I have one to manage this inventory? And they're like, yes, just never play a game on it. I'm like, okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So the shop's account will never play a game of Hex.
That makes sense. But even that being said, it's the idea that you now have cards that you're able to touch and able to trade to you, mm-hmm. the player, for, because you have now two accounts, and you can say, cool, this account will never be, but it'll trade cards to me that are, you now have the mindset that these are no longer my cards, even though they are yours, and in terms of that they are your that
right.
If you chose
I am the currently 100% owner of battleshopper.com, therefore right. I own them.
Right, they are your cards. In other words, if you chose not to sell them, you didn't have to sell them.
Correct.
But because you had the mentality of, this is now my business, this is now my thing, this is the inventory of the store, they are now the store's cards. And that's right. That's kind of, that's, I mean.
And yeah, no, like there's a.
It's got to be a bit of a mind blow to a certain degree, like that you're thinking like that.
I mean, it's not that bad because at the end of the day, if someone wanted to go in and buy that deck out from under me, it would make me a decent chunk of change.
Right. I mean,
I was probably playing a $200 deck.
That's fine.
And so if someone wanted to come in and buy it out from under me, that I ended up not doing. I got like.
What do you care? 60. You made $200.
Yeah, I got like 60.
What do you give a damn? You made money. You flipped. You did exactly what your mission was. You took it. You took a concept and you flipped it.
It was.
You made a sale.
It was a 572 person tournament, and I only got like 66th or something.
I just find it super fascinating, the idea of like that you're now, that the game that you used to play, you know, that you played because. I want to get back, you know, that there's issues Magic, or you want to play digitally Magic or something, or just like for me, like Hearthstone's always been that kind of like, man, I just want to play another card game. Like, I just want to play Magic, you know, just because right. Hearthstone always felt like there's limitations to it.
Yeah. You're kind of like Hex.
But I like the idea that now the card game that was the thing, that was sort of thing, has now become the, okay, how do I make money on, you know, like the business side?
And that was always, you're not having fun. That was always the right. thing, even with Magic. Right.
And I'm not saying that you're not enjoying playing the game. You still do enjoy the play game. And that's why you see a market there. But I like the idea that there's a shift to mentality in you that this is the store's deck. I'm playing with house money, so to speak, right now.
Yeah. And I mean, like, yeah, like the deck we're going to play tonight, there's about, nine cards in it.
Right.
That I did not have in my personal collection that I pulled from the store. and combined, like seven cards.
I can't wait until I you know, because we're almost out of time here, but I cannot wait. This is when I know that your business is completely taken off and that everything is going great. Is when it's become to the point where, because you want to make sure that they're yours and no one else's, and they're not inventory, that you buy from the store.
Oh, goodness. That's not going to happen. Well, okay. So that's not going to happen.
At least credit the store. Like you.
That's not going to. Yeah, I won't buy them from the store for the sole purpose of I'd have to pay taxes on it. Like, why would I do that?
It's there's going to be a moment where you're like, it's a lot easier if I just buy it from the store. That's what's going to happen.
But like, no, because that doesn't make sense. Because like,
this is
not yet, at least.
Right.
If it gets to the point where that's the case, then I'm probably doing a lot.
That's what I'm trying to say. This is what I'm implying, is that it's become the point where it's like, a lot easier just to buy from the store.
Oh, and speaking of like, I'd have to pay taxes on it or whatever. And not to say that I'm trying to avoid taxes.
Right.
It's that because apparently, did you know that Texas,
yes,
is like one of the best places to have a business.
Yep. Oh yeah, I know, because you don't have to be like, there's when it comes to the amount of income you make as a business, like
no for sales tax.
Oh, that too. Yeah, it's cheap as balls. This is not to get in the weeds, but it's like you're mentioning, it's like the origin versus
yes, that that's kind of exactly thing. It. Right. Long story short, I have to regard the only people that have to be charged sales tax. You always have to declare it on your taxes.
Yes,
if you do it. But the only time I have to take it is if they're in Texas, and when that is, I charge them what my sales tax is, not what theirs would be, which makes it infinitely easier. If I had opened this in Washington State, I would have to hire someone to manage sales tax for me, because it would be impossible for me to.
Whereas here, it's
stupidly simple.
It's 6.25 plus
8.25.
Well, it's
total.
Total is 8.25, but the base tax, because this is where I learned, the base Texas tax is 6.25, and then the city is allowed to add another 2%.
There's also a Travis County.
Right. Well, the county's allowed to add. Sorry. Mm-hmm. The county's allowed to add a certain amount.
And now we are getting into the weeds, so let's.
Right. either way, for most people, it's 8.25. It's just assume it is. It's, I know this because of other things. Regardless of it, Matt, super pumped for you, sir. I'm super glad that you'd launched it. If people want to actually go, let's say they play Hex, or they watch the post stream and they want to, they now like, fuck, I want to buy cards. How can they acquire cards?
Yeah, no, so battleshopper.com. which is a fantastically punny name if you know the game itself. BATTLESHOPPER.com.
Plus, it kind of it just rolls off the tongue. Battle Shopper.
Yeah,
like it sounds like it invokes like a oh
yeah. And if you want to try out Hex, it is available on Steam. It is a very, very good. I'm biased, but ask Roberto after tonight.
We'll find out. We'll find out in the post show.
It's a very, very well put together game. I really enjoy it.
All right. And of course, you want to find me. I'm at Vincent404 there in the chat rooms and the Twitters. And if you want to catch previous podcasts, you can head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you find links to show notes, our other Twitter account, which is at 8bitlife podcast. And of course, after you've bought all your cards from battleshopper.com.
We're also on Twitter at battleshopper, or my personal account is at waffleophagus.
Yes, and also after you've paid him money for cards and bought all your packs, and you look and you say, well, in my digital wallet I have, you know, $1.50 left over, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and help the show become bigger, better, and more awesomer. So that's it for today, and tune next time and talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.